I want you to imagine a rather intense scenario for a second. Picture yourself sitting at this sprawling, meticulously organized desk, and you are designing a multi-million dollar luxury home.
Okay, setting a scene.
Right. And you are just agonizing over the structural integrity of a cantilevered roof.
You know, one of those really dramatic projecting overhang.
Exactly. The kind that looks like it's completely defying gravity without any visible pillars holding it up. You're studying the flow of natural light through floor-to-ceiling glass, and you're debating the exact right composite materials required to withstand the harsh coastal elements for the next
A
century.
lot of high-stakes pressure in that
A
moment.
massive amount of pressure. And then, without missing a single beat, you just pivot.
Just completely switch gears.
Completely. Suddenly, you are obsessing with that exact same level of creative intensity over the perfect bowl of braised goose noodle soup.
Wait, soup?
Yes, braised goose noodle soup. And immediately after that, you are rigorously analyzing the precise rhythmic arpeggiator sound of a vintage Roland Juno 60 synthesizer.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that iconic 1980s electronic music instrument that creates those rapid cascading chord patterns, which, let's be honest, feels light years away from pouring concrete or framing walls.
It sounds completely contradictory on the surface, like a creative mind that is just scattered in a dozen entirely disconnected
That's
directions.
exactly how it sounds.
Because the standard assumption in almost any highly technical field is that to be truly elite at something as complex as architecture, you have to put on the blinders. You have to hyper-focus on your specific discipline and just ignore all the outside noise.
That is the standard assumption, isn't it? But looking at this retrospective document today, it seems this particular veteran firm is actively rejecting that laser-focused approach. Welcome to the deep dive. Today, our mission is to explore a truly fascinating and expansive text. It serves as both a historical retrospective and a highly strategic roadmap for the future.
And it's titled Woolt Architects, 25 Years of Design Evolution.
Yes. And right from the jump, we need to establish that this deep dive isn't just about buildings or floor plans or zoning laws. It is a detailed study in how a creative ecosystem survives, how it adapts to shifting cultures, and how it completely redefines itself over a quarter of a century.
Which is incredibly relevant for you, the listener, regardless of whether you work in design, finance, tech, or education.
Oh.
We are currently living in an era defined by massive information overload and the rapid acceleration of artificial intelligence.
Absolutely.
So studying how a veteran firm navigates profound technological and cultural change is invaluable. It offers a tangible blueprint. It demonstrates how to future-proof your own career, your own business, or even just your own creative side projects. Because survival in a rapidly shifting landscape isn't about stubbornness, and it isn't about doing the same thing harder.
Right.
It is about deliberate evolution.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because to understand where Woolt Architects is deliberately steering their ship in 2026, we have to look at the foundation of where they started. The origin story of the firm's founder, Taras Woolf, is actually quite surprising.
It really is.
The document notes that 2026 marks 25 years since the firm began as Woolf Designs before officially evolving into the Woolf Architects practice we know today. But the timeline of actual creative output goes back much further. The portfolio we are looking at spans four decades.
It is a remarkably long time to sustain a high level of premium creative output without stagnating.
And the detail in the text that really stood out is that Tara saw his first built works in Australia in the early 1990s, with projects in Asia happening even before that. His very first formally published works appeared in a Thai design magazine way back in 1992.
And he was showcasing interior designs that he had completed at just 17 years of age.
17, before he had even set foot in a university to begin his formal academic studies.
That is wild.
Think about the sheer discipline required for a teenager to achieve that in 1992. We are talking about an era before global digital portfolios, before Pinterest, before you could just email a high-res rendering. Getting published internationally meant physical photographs, physical mail, and real-world networking.
If we pause and analyze what that kind of longevity actually represents, it goes way beyond personal achievement. The document states that today, more than 200 distinct projects are showcased across their various platforms. They have shared thousands of images and published nearly 1,000 written articles globally spanning newspapers, specialized magazines, and books.
That's a massive volume of work.
Exactly. When a single creative entity meticulously documents their work over 40 years, what they're actually building is an archive of evolving human taste. By looking through this portfolio, you're seeing the broad cultural shifts of the 90s, the 2000s, and the 2010s. You're seeing the impact of changing technological advancements and the shifting fluid definition of what luxury even means, all mapped out through the critical lens of one firm.
But realistically, anyone can have a good run for a decade or two. Sustaining that over four decades across 200 distinct projects, how does a creative entity not just burn out or become a parody of itself?
That is the ultimate challenge.
You would think the natural next step after 25 years as a highly successful formal practice is massive traditional corporate expansion. The standard playbook says you announce a giant new glass and steel skyscraper headquarters in the middle of Melbourne, or you launch a franchise model and open 50 satellite offices around the globe.
Right, the usual corporate empire building.
But they explicitly state in their 2026 strategy that this is absolutely not the plan. They operate under a very specific mantra right now. The text says, and I'm quoting here, not bigger, not louder, rather wider.
What's fascinating here is how completely counterintuitive that is to the standard business trajectory we are all taught to follow.
Totally backwards to what they teach in business school.
Exactly. Usually, when a successful company hits a major milestone, they become obsessed with scale. They want the highest possible headcount, the largest real estate footprint, the most aggressive marketing campaigns. But Wolf is actively rejecting that model of sheer volume.
They don't want the bloat.
Right. By prioritizing being wider, they are deliberately choosing reach, accessibility, and cohesion. They explicitly state in the document that when they talk about expanding their presence into the universe, they are not talking about physical size or corporate bloat.
But let's be realistic here for a second. Isn't wider just a sneaky, highly artistic way of saying bigger? If a firm is suddenly making audio podcasts, publishing books, and designing underground basements, how do they avoid just spreading themselves completely thin and losing their quality control?
That is the exact trap many successful creatives and businesses fall into. You achieve a level of success, which buys you freedom, so you pursue a dozen new interests and side projects.
And then what happens?
Eventually, your core brand identity shatters into a bunch of disconnected, mediocre pieces. But Wolf counters this by employing a very deliberate structural philosophy they call the tree metaphor.
Ah, the tree metaphor.
Yeah. Over the years, Wolf has built close to 10 different websites. They operate multiple Instagram channels, they host specialized design platforms, they manage review sites, and they run mentoring programs. For a long time, these all grew organically, like sprawling branches extending in totally different directions.
It's a trap so many of us fall into. I look at my own life. I've got a neglected blog from 2019, a great idea I started outlining in a notebook but never finished, and a sourdough starter I completely abandoned in the back of my fridge.
Ah, the classic pandemic sourdough starter.
R.I.P. to my sourdough starter, yeah. But really just dead branches everywhere, pulling energy away from my main focus. But the firm's strategy for 2026 is actually all about consolidation, isn't it?
It is.
They are intentionally taking all those sprawling, disparate branches and systematically reconnecting them to the exact same solid trunk. They are pruning the dead weight to create one cohesive design ecosystem. As the document elegantly puts it, one ecosystem, one design philosophy, many expressions.
That's the key. Many expressions, one root system.
And I want to pause and direct a question right to you, listening to this deep dive right now. Look at your own career trajectory, your side projects, or your hobbies. Are they just a bunch of scattered branches pulling your time and energy in conflicting directions? Or do you have a system to intentionally feed them back into your core trunk? Do your side projects actually make your foundation stronger?
That is the essential question of sustainable growth. You have to maintain the structural integrity of the trunk. And understanding that philosophy leads perfectly into how Wolf is choosing to interact with the broader public in this new era.
Because if your stated goal is to be wider and more accessible, you fundamentally have to change how you gatekeep your industry knowledge.
Correct.
This brings us to their new virtual public workshops, which the document highlights are entirely free. They are launching these digital sessions to allow the global public to reach directly into the mind of Wolf architects. And they go out of their way to clarify what this is not.
It is not a disguised preliminary consultation.
And it is absolutely not a sales pitch to land new clients. It is a genuine open invitation to ask questions, explore abstract ideas, and tap into decades of hard-earned architectural experience.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, you really have to understand the historical context of the architectural industry to appreciate how unusual this is. Historically, architecture has operated as the ultimate ivory tower,
Very exclusive.
The profession relies heavily on exclusivity. The knowledge is highly guarded. The professional terminology is deliberately complex and alienating to the layman. And the barrier to entry, whether you want to study it at a university or hire a premium firm to build your home, is incredibly high.
So they're essentially tearing down those walls.
Exactly. By taking knowledge that has been rigorously refined and tested across hundreds of expensive projects and four decades of creative evolution, and choosing to just give it away in a public forum, Wolf is doing something radical. They are openly acknowledging that high-end architecture can feel incredibly intimidating, and they are actively choosing to open the gates rather than guarding them.
Here's where it gets really interesting. It's brilliant that they are opening up this architectural knowledge to the public, but what's fascinating is where they're applying that knowledge next.
Right.
When we think of architecture, we almost exclusively think of the spaces above ground living rooms, sprawling kitchens, master bedrooms. But Wolf takes that same premium design philosophy and applies it underground. The document details their approach to bespoke basement garages, and they are one of the very few high-end firms that genuinely understands deep automotive passion.
Which requires an entirely different type of design vocabulary. You are no longer designing for human habitation. You are designing for the preservation and display of machinery.
For Wolf, and for the enthusiasts they design for, a garage is never simply a subterranean concrete box to store a car so it doesn't get rained on. It is a gallery. It is a sanctuary for classic and luxury vehicles.
They approach it with incredible reverence.
They really do. They approach the lighting, the airflow, and the materials of a basement garage with the exact same microscopic detail as they do the luxury living spaces above. They specifically mention the meticulous intention and care required to perfectly house a timeless Mercedes-Benz Pagoda.
Beautiful machine.
A classic 1960s luxury sports car. It's known for its distinctive, slightly concave hardtop roof that makes it look like a traditional Asian pagoda. You don't just park a piece of automotive history like that on a stained concrete slab under a flickering fluorescent bulb.
No, you absolutely don't. And that transition, moving the same design philosophy from the sunlit living room down to the bespoke underground garage,
yeah,
is just one example of how they are moving beyond traditional building design.
They are expanding in a lot of unexpected directions.
Their educational push is expanding in tandem with us. They are actively mentoring and tutoring to bridge the massive practical gaps that traditional university curriculums often leave completely untouched. Mm-hmm. Because academia, by its very nature, struggles to keep pace with the rapidly evolving realities of the construction and design industries.
Furthermore, they're expanding their written newsletters into highly specialized streams. They are stepping into the audio space to bring high-quality, nuanced design discussions directly to their audience. And then there is the upcoming book mentioned in the text titled Jesse's Life Tree,
which serves as another fascinating branch of this overarching ecosystem.
But a children's book, that feels like a massive leap from designing multi-million dollar homes and bespoke classic car galleries. How does writing a bedtime story about a tree fit into the portfolio of a premier architecture firm?
It fits precisely because of that philosophy we discussed earlier. One ecosystem, many expressions. The document describes Jesse's Life Tree as a beautifully crafted children's story, yes, but it explicitly notes that it carries a deeper, universal message about growth, connection, and foundation.
Back to the trunk.
Exactly. An architecture firm writing a children's book isn't a distraction if the core message of the book reinforces the firm's central philosophy about building strong roots and nurturing environments. All of these diverse expressions, the free public workshops, the academic tutoring, the children's book, the meticulous automotive galleries, they all serve a singular purpose.
Which is what?
Building immense trust and establishing undeniable cultural authority, which happens to be exactly what a creative firm needs as they face down the most disruptive technological force of our generation.
Which brings us to the climax of this entire retrospective document, artificial intelligence.
A big one.
The text details a recent workshop Wolf conducted at the University of Melbourne, and as you might guess, AI was the heavily dominant topic of discussion. AI is transforming the visual and structural design fields at a breakneck pace. We are talking about software that can generate hundreds of high-resolution architectural renderings in a matter of seconds.
This raises an important question. How should seasoned, highly skilled professionals react to a technology that actively threatens to automate the very core skills they spent decades mastering?
It's terrifying for a lot of people.
It is. But to answer that, Wolf contextualizes the current AI panic historically. They point out that AI is fundamentally transforming design, just as computer-aided design or CAD software once did. and just as the mass adoption of the internet did before that.
I remember that shift.
Think back to the sheer panic in the design and engineering industries when CAD first arrived. Traditional draftsmen genuinely thought hand drawing was becoming obsolete overnight, and therefore, architecture as a human art form was dead.
But it wasn't.
No. Wolf existed through the initial CAD era. They existed through the dawn of the internet. They evolved through those massive paradigm shifts. And they are viewing AI through that exact same historical lens.
So what does this all mean for the immediate future? How do they actually plan to evolve and survive the incoming wave of generative AI? The document lays out what I think is the most powerful thesis of this entire retrospective. They state, and I am quoting here, AI can generate options, yet it cannot replace judgment. It cannot replace taste. It cannot replace lived experience.
That is the absolute crux of the matter. As the world leans further and further into machine automation, the market is going to be flooded with infinite, instantly generated options. A client can go to an AI program and ask for 100 variations of a modern glass facade.
And they'll get them in 10 seconds.
But generative AI lacks physical friction. It doesn't know how the harsh afternoon sunlight actually hits that specific type of glass over a 12-hour day. Mm-hmm. It doesn't know if the glare will blind the neighbors or if the material feels hollow and cheap to the human touch.
It has no real-world context.
Exactly. When options are infinite and practically free, the value of curation becomes astronomical. The value of human creative authority, the ability to know which of those 100 options is actually good in the real world, skyrockets.
And that brings us right back to our very first thought experiment at the start of this deep dive. The cantilevered roof of the multi-million dollar house, the rich broth of the braised goose noodle soup, the cascading notes of the Roland Juno 60 synthesizer.
It all connects.
Wolfsilf is deliberately positioning themselves not just as dream home builders, but as dream builders in general. Because if an AI program can draw a structurally perfect house in 10 seconds, the premium human value isn't in the drawing anymore. It's in the cultivated taste required to curate a whole textured human life.
That is so true.
That's why they obsess over the ergonomics and design of furniture. That is why they care about the pacing and atmosphere that makes an unforgettable dinner party. That is why they review and refine the design of a pair of sunglasses, or the presentation of a bowl of soup, or the perfect arpeggiator sound on a vintage electronic synth. Because they care about the friction of the real world at every single scale.
Design is intention. Design is a physical experience. Design is emotion. And artificial intelligence does not have emotions. It does not experience the comforting warmth of a bowl of hot soup on a freezing winter day. And it certainly doesn't feel the visceral, chest-rattling thrill of starting up a vintage Mercedes-Benz engine in a perfectly lit, acoustically tuned basement gallery.
AI can't feel that.
Not at all. By obsessing over these deeply tactile human experiences, Wolf is anchoring their ultimate value in the one domain that AI simply cannot touch. The physical emotional reality of living.
Which perfectly sets up their ultimate takeaway for 2026. After 25 years operating successfully as Wolf Architects, they are actually returning to their roots. They are transitioning back toward the ethos of their original name, Wolf Designs. They are moving beyond just architecture to fully build out that complete multidisciplinary design ecosystem we have been talking about.
It is the ultimate realization of their central tree imagery. They have those incredibly deep roots grounded in four decades of raw, real-world experience. They have a strong, unshakable trunk formed over 25 years as a formal architectural practice. Now, all those diverse branches, from the free public education to the children's books to the automotive galleries, are aligned, and the fresh leaves are ready to emerge.
A completely revitalized tree.
Yes. But they leave the reader with a very specific grounded caution. And I say 2026 is not about nostalgia. It is about activation. They're not simply looking backward to admire their past portfolio. They are actively using that dense foundation to launch into this new, unpredictable, AI-driven universe.
The universe is wide. Wolf is ready. That is exactly how they close the document. And as we wrap up this deep dive into their roadmap, I want to leave you with one final provocative thought to carry with you today.
Let's hear it.
We have spent this time talking about how AI is inevitably going to flood our world with endless, frictionless options. In the very near future, AI will be able to generate 1,000 flawless structural blueprints or marketing concepts or business strategies in mere seconds. So perhaps the true, irreplaceable value of human creativity moving forward doesn't lie in our ability to generate raw content at all.
It's a massive shift in perspective.
Perhaps our ultimate value lies entirely in our courage to choose, to look out at a massive sea of infinite machine-made options and decisively choose which creation actually matters to the human soul. I want you to mull that over today. How can you actively cultivate your own unique taste and your own deeply human lived experience so that it becomes your ultimate AI-proof competitive advantage?
A vital question for all of us as we navigate this wider universe together.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. Go cultivate your trunk, and we will catch you next time.